to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Once upon a time, if beer wasn't crystal clear, it was bullshit and sent back to the bar. Somewhere along the lines, Coopers introduced us to the idea that having bits in your beer was okay, and punters would roll the bottles on the bar before consuming. Fast forward 20 years or so, and for some drinkers, if it's not hazy and juicy, they don't want to know about it. The world is in the midst of a haze craze. I want to know more about these amazing beers, so I've asked the pro, Dave Padden from Akasha Brewing, and his protege, Ben Miller, who brews under the name From Ben, to jump back onto the podcast to talk all things hazy. Welcome aboard, boys.
There you go.
It's lovely to be here.
Been a little while, and we were just reminiscing then, saying that last time we spoke, Ben was not married, but now he is.
Yep, I am, and nothing's changed.
Nothing.
Oh, other than the fact I'm married, obviously.
Are you a wedding ring wearer?
I am, mate. I got a silicone one for work, so I don't deglove my finger.
Oh. Yeah, that's a fair call.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
Pretty cool.
Thanks for that. Degloving your finger. That's lovely.
Yeah. Not nice. There goes my beer, and it just went all over my friggin' screen. That's just terrible.
Wouldn't be the first time.
What have you guys got a beer tonight?
I do. I've got a just a apricot sour, a peach sour. Sorry, I brewed at home.
Nice. And Dave, being that you're coming from the brewery, I'm sure you've got access to something.
I've got a can of water. I don't know what happened. I'm really embarrassed.
Where's the squealer of double IPA left at your bloody?
I was going to drink it and tell you how good it was. I'm going to sneak down during this podcast and grab one.
We'll never know because you're so light on your feet and we just never hear when you're rummaging around trying to get out of here.
That's it.
All right. Well, it has been a couple of months since we spoke last, and goddamn COVID-19 has gotten in the way of absolutely everything.
Well, it's changed, eh?
Jesus Christ, it has.
Yeah.
How are you guys faring at the moment?
Dave?
Look, it's been an interesting period of time for everybody. It's we were quite frightened at the start of it and how it was going to affect our business, and it's affected the business of many of our customers badly. Luckily, our business has a pretty big focus on cans, and that part of the market has stood up during the crisis. So whilst we're certainly not doing the kind of volumes that we would have done a couple of months ago, we're okay. We haven't had to get rid of anybody, and everybody's fully employed, and that's all I could ask for, to be honest.
Yep, no, that's good. What about you, Ben?
Obviously, with me on the brewing side of things, well, nothing's really changed because I only do beers when there's space.
Yep.
But look, trucking side of things, flat stick, both of me and Janice, if nothing's really changed on our front as far as work goes. Construction sites still go. Garden centres are still open, so everything we supply is still flat out. And now I'm just waiting for Dave to free up a tank space so he can brew another batch.
Nice. He doesn't sound like he's that ready.
No, he's not. He's like, yeah, fuck off.
You can wait.
Always next week.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, let's straighten this thing up. We're going to talk about hazies tonight because I know, I know one of us on this podcast is a bigger fan than the other two, perhaps. So I thought we'd better do it because otherwise he might cry because I hear he's a bit of a crier.
You're talking about Dave, yeah?
No, I'm talking about you, dickhead.
Loves a good.
All right, let's go back to basics.
All right, it was my wedding day, and I was emotional.
I didn't say what it was. You just let that kid out of the bag, you idiot.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm proud of it, mate.
I just never thought someone could be that emotional all in one day. Amazing.
Is he an ugly crier?
Fucking oath.
Is there such thing as a good-looking crier?
Yeah, I've never met. That's the weirdest question. I've never, honestly, in my whole entire life, looked at someone crying and be like, "Look, I'm sorry you're upset, but fuck, you look good."
I sometimes say to my daughter when she's, she's like 12, so she's always emotional and crying and stuff. And I say, stop crying. You look ugly when you cry.
You wait.
It's coming. And you look ugly when you cry, Layla. You're like, Daddy, you can't say it. So it's like crying on top of crying.
No, I agree. You can't say that.
Yeah, you
can. You
can. You wait a few years, mate. You got that's nothing.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna be hell. Anyway, let's get back to the beer. Hazies. How long ago did the haze craze start, you reckon?
Oh, it'd be heady topper, wouldn't it? What's that, 10, 15 years ago, Dave?
Oh, see, we're already getting into the is that really a haze thing? But
that's where it originated.
The original New England brewery, Hazy IPOs. Yeah, I would have said heady.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay. 15 years. Shit, I didn't realize it was that long.
Well, it's a lot. It is. It's a lot long because obviously that beer was around for a long time before sort of haze went mental. That's why I encourage everyone to drink it out of the can as well, I suppose, because you're probably going to be bothered to get judged on it. But that was. Yeah. That would be. Should it have to be 15 years old, that beer? I'm sure of it. But, yeah, you know, sure. on today's standard, that's probably more so towards still being a hazy West Coast, I suppose, rather than a, you know what I mean? Like, because it's nothing on what Treehouse and all that sort of stuff are brewing.
I read somewhere this week in doing my vast research for this episode that the Nipah was a byproduct of a goal to craft a really highly aromatic, juicy and sort of soft beer as a bit of a counter to the more aggressive, dank West Coast style IPA. Is my research correct?
I think it is. I think, you know, I obviously sit in the West Coast camp a hell of a lot more than I do the other, but it's – I will always say that the West Coast went a little bit too far, particularly over in the States. You know, it got really bitter and really not very user-friendly.
Hey, just bring it in real close while Dave fixes his technical issues. You'll hear he sounds a little bit different when he completes this next sentence. Great brewer, but has been known to really struggle with his podcast setup, you know. Anyway, if you have a spare minute and you like what we do here, please give us a review on iTunes. All new reviews I see this week will go into the draw to win some Akasha beer. My shout. It really helps me spread the craft beer gospel via the Apple iTunes machine. All right, he's back now.
So, yeah, we got to a point where West Coast a few years ago were getting really, really bitter and a little bit over the top, or maybe a lot bit over the top. And then we saw with the Nipahs coming through was a real different story in terms of extremely low bitterness, much more pillowy mouthfeel, lighter colour. Everything that West Coast wasn't at the time, so the contrast was really stark.
That's interesting, mate. I've never heard you say that before, even though we've heard that four times in the last 5 minutes because of your technical problems.
Did I say it better each time or worse?
Keep repeating it. I'm sorry, mate. I had to give you that.
Try it again.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. At least you didn't forget to push record this time.
Yeah, true.
Fucking hell.
So you're describing the pure characteristics of the hazies these days. So they're what? You can't see through them. They're pillowy, silky, aromatic.
And I think it's important that the last thing I mentioned was the opaqueness of the beer, because I think there's a little bit too much focus on that when we all started brewing them and not enough focus on how good the beer underneath was.
Yeah. And was it true when they first started brewing these things, they're actually throwing in a whole bunch of other shit, adjuncts wise, to get them to be really, really, you know, opaque?
Yeah, I think, there's stories of using, you know, chucking flour in the boil and all sorts of different things to try and get that haziness across the line. And there was definitely a lot of hazies all around the world that haze was essentially dropping out pretty quickly, even by the time, you know, even in the first couple of weeks. So, and I think the market, rightly or wrongly, was expecting an incredibly hazy beer. They were seeing, yeah, the Instagram photos of Treehouse and all these other beers out there that were, you know, you could not see through them. So, it's some people were disappointed with what they got at the end of the day.
Because, Ben, that you're the man for these ones, I'm going to give it to you. what goes on to make them hazy? Explain it to me.
Oh, there's a lot, really, to be honest with you. It's so like Dave was saying, you know, a lot of people have added sort of things to their beers to be hazy, me being one of them, admittedly. When I first started, we found a product called Tannel A, which is a tannic acid extracted from plant materials or something like that. It's like I can't remember the exact definition of it. I have to bring it up. But, you know, I haven't used that for a long time now because all that does, they use it in like Hefeweizens and stuff like that. It just locks in haze, really. We were probably using it on the extreme side before we really understood what makes a hazy beer. Like Dave said, there's probably a lot too much, like far too much concentration on the appearance rather than the beer underneath it all. But, a good choice of some higher protein malts, things like wheat and oats really help. I've really honestly achieved the best levels of like retained haze through biotransformation. I think I've read somewhere that if you add too much wheat or oats, those proteins are actually too heavy and they drop out over time anyway. But I've definitely had the best results with a really good yeast and hop combination and just really getting that biotransformation. That's, I opened up a can of from the last batch of Tenapai. I opened one last week that had been stored hot in my mate's garage. I don't know. Don't even get me started. But
what's a garage, mate? Sorry, a garage?
Yeah, what is that
a thing? A garage.
Yeah.
Oh, a garage.
Come on, in Australia.
A car hole.
Garage.
A car hole. and it was exactly the same as the day we canned it.
Oh, really?
So, yep. And nice. Just absolutely. So, by far, that's the best sort of haze results we've had. And especially being on a commercial, I've had really good ones at home, but commercially, that's by far the best retention as well, especially, and even if you poured the last of the can out, there's nothing on the bottom of the can. It's just that same consistency the whole way through. And every can I've seen has been like that. So that's, and that's really concentrating on that good biotransformation sort of period.
What about you, Dave? What have you sort of experienced?
I think the important thing to, like always, I think, we've got our opinions. There's certainly many of them out there and there's some science to back them and some not, there's not science to back them, but I think the important thing, what certainly in our brewery, what we've realised is that, it's not yeast. I think that's the most important thing to remember when it comes to haze is that generally speaking, it's not yeast because yeast drops out quite quickly, right?
So you want to hope not. You want to hope not anyway.
As I said, in our brewery, but I think it's important to remember that it's not true, but it's not, it's not yeast. It's proteins and polyphenols and all those kinds of cool things that do hang around and stay in suspension. So as Ben mentioned, I think the use of high protein malts and adjuncts actually helps, but not too much. I think we certainly use quite a lot of them when we started brewing them and have backed that off a little bit, but it's really important that they're there. And yeast selection is horribly important. There are certain yeasts that work for a hazy. And they're a little bit, sometimes a little bit harder to play with than the usual American ones that we do. But yeast selection is really important.
And are we starting to get that balance right between the look of the beer and the taste? I mean, last night I had a Alpha Delta Brewing Hyperion, which is from the UK, Newcastle. And that thing just looked like I just got the orange juice out of the fridge and poured it into my glass and then maybe put some whipped cream on the top or something. You just could not see through it at all. But it also had a great taste. It was fruity as hell. And, it was a beautiful beer with double dry hop, pale, Chinook and Simcoe. Are we getting it better now?
Definitely. Australia's really, especially in the last sort of 2 months, I think, some of the guys there really, really started hitting them out of the park. And, we're now seeing some of the big guys, the big players in the haze game, Deeds, Range in Brisbane, Mountain Culture and up in Katoomba here. They're selling out within a couple of minutes of their hazy releases. They're just going ballistic. People aren't even there's people upset all over the internet because they haven't. Well, they
what? People get upset on the internet.
Honestly, there's been some hissy fits. It's somewhat entertaining to watch, but because these guys are creating beers that are that sought after now. People are just going mental for them, which I think that's really exciting for Australia because, for a long time, there were some pretty embarrassing attempts of hazies out there, like really, really, really pretty shit. So it's really cool to see the way it's going now. I love it. I think it's awesome.
Hey, Dave, do you have a favourite hazy beer outside of your own?
Oh, I was going to say there's a beer called Cloud Nine that I'm a bit of a fan of, but
I don't see them in Tasmania.
I think a little brewery called From Ben is making some great ones. I think, you know, I think it takes a lot of dedication to, you know, obviously apart from the beers you mentioned before, Ben, I think they're all great examples. But I think, you know, Ben's obviously been putting a lot of effort into focusing on something and getting it right. So I'd definitely be listening to what he's got to say today. And I really think the last one that was released in cans was an absolute cracker. So the last version of Tino Pie, I think, was a
culmination. Oh, that was good. Yeah.
A whole lot of work by Ben. And, you know, as he said, you know, opening it, you know, like the haze is perfect. The mouthfeel, the taste was great. And, you know, minimal hop burn, which we see a lot of problem in hazies at the moment. So, you know, without floating his boat too much, I thought that was one of the cool ones lately.
I'll already have to get Janice to drag me through the door frame after this, mate. I'm not going to fit through. My head's that big.
Actually, it's funny. I asked for some questions this week from the guys that I'll drop in over the session tonight, and a fellow by the name of Joel Slade asked, what is that spiky taste that comes with a lot of Neepers? And it's what you're saying. It's that hop burn, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, hop burn, a funny one. We've been we've had it a couple of times, and we've found some ways to beat it, and it really is – what we've found is just trying, you know, particularly when you've got a yeast that it's hard to drop out of the beer. So some of the English strains of yeast that are popular in hazies really are. It is hard to clear that yeast out, particularly with the hazies. And so it's kind of when we first started brewing, someone's tricked us into tasting a hop, right? We've all done that, right? Everyone's at one stage in when they've started brewing or went to a brewery and said, oh, one of your mates goes, yeah, chew on this hop pill. It's really nice. You chewed it. And it's just awful. It's this bitter, acrid, awful taste. And it's, for me, hop burn is a really light, it's a lighter version of that. This sort of right at the back of your palate, you get this bitterness that just doesn't feel right. And it's those hop particles or something that's hanging on or hanging around that's usually being, usually attached to that yeast. So we found if you can try and get that yeast out of the end product, you can usually get rid of that hop burn.
Yeah, definitely. It's there's also the other side of it too, there's also the other side of it too, where a lot of people don't realise that you know, the bitterness that dry hopping heavily really makes you actually really do get a lot of perceived bitterness out of a dry hopping a beer heavily. So there. I think they're humulones, whatever they are. They're oxidized alpha acids, pretty much, and they have a similar side, like a similar bitterness level to, I can't remember what it was, like 60 or 70% or something like that, as bitter as iso alpha acids. So under a heavy dry hop schedule, you are pulling a hell of a lot of bitterness out of that beer, out of those hops. Sorry. Which, you know, that can contribute, as well as, like Dave was saying, you know, just the combination of too much yeast left in suspension, because, you know, I'm not sure if anyone out there listening has actually bothered to taste your yeast, but can often be quite bitter. But then obviously the other side of it as well is just simply hot particles floating around, you know, like chewing on a hot pellet. It's just not nice. It's not pleasant. And you know, it has been a real challenge, to be honest. You know, we've brewed beers identical, exactly the same way. And, you know, one's come out fine, the other's been horrendously bitter, and you just can't understand why or what's happening. I know that the age of hops can contribute to that somewhat as well. I think their oxidized beta acids as well can make a difference. So if you're using a slightly older hop, that can sort of come through as a bit more bitterness in the dry hop as well. But yeah, it's been a tough one, actually, because, you know, when we first started brewing them, and this is where I went back through my brewing notes, because I think I've spoken about this before on the podcast. I just all of a sudden started getting a more and more astringently chalky bitter beer. It wasn't nice. It had this horrendous green hop bitterness to it. And I went back and found that when that started happening was the earlier I was dry hopping in the ferment. So, you know, that's also seems to be something that sets it off if you do a really early biotransformation hop, rather than towards sort of maybe the last 10 or 15% attenuation. It really throws that flavor out big time. And that's something that I have been able to pinpoint, you know, go, I dry hopped on day two or three of this one and it had that flavor, you know, and it's consistently, so I started to find a consistency where it was coming from, and adding it later on sort of tend to subdue that somewhat. Has we still have sometimes got more of it than you know, than we wanted, but that definitely made a difference too.
It's actually interesting. Another question from one of the listeners, Justin Time, who actually brews with Spotty Dog Brewers. He's asked, what water adjustments do you recommend and how should brewers avoid chalkiness? So I think you've pretty much answered that there.
Yeah. I mean, other than the water adjustments, I suppose, I just tend to stick to a 2-to-1 chloride to sulfate ratio. That's worked quite well for me. I control other things of like mouthfeel and stuff and my mash temperature and final gravity and shit like that as well. But yeah, other than the, I guess the chalkiness, I suppose, if that's what he means, I mean, because it could be like a minerally chalkiness as well, which I suppose might come from, you know, maybe too far on the chloride side, I suppose.
Talking about the recipes, I know you suggested an 80-10-10 malt mix to me, Ben, when I was trying my first hazy. Is that something you stick with for most of your hazy beers? And do you want to explain it?
That's not something I stick with.
Oh, fuck you. You give me the shit ones, will you?
That was a good mix. That was a good mix I chose for you on your system.
For me, special me.
It's easy to work with and it's unlikely to give you a stuck mash, for one.
Okay.
Equal parts wheat and oat is, I've always found, as anyone that's asked me, I always say start with equal parts wheat and oats, and then as you brew more and more of them, you can move one up or down or see how it changes the beer.
Yep.
Some hazies I've done before have been like 25% oats and 15% wheat, which, you know, as you can imagine, are just a nightmare to brew.
And still sticking with the single base malt as well?
Yeah, generally. Like I said, I've actually gone more towards a Pilsner malt these days. I don't know why. It seems to give me a good colour and I've had really good results out of it with a higher mash temp. So, but the, you know, like while I say those big percentages of oats or wheat or whatever give me good results, there's also that side of it as well where, you know, we're sort of more leaning towards less is more now in that sense. But also, I know you video those brew days, so if I'd given you a percentage like that, you would have just spent the whole time swearing at me because you would have you wouldn't have been able to sparge, you would have had a stuck mash. Fucking Ben, he doesn't know what he's doing because he's would have been on the other side of the first bit of abuse I copped at the start of this.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave, for someone who doesn't just play around in their shed, who's actually got a real brewery, These aren't cheap beers to make, are they, mate? I still backhand it to you.
They're not. And I remember, and Ben actually was heavily involved in this beer. We did our Gabs beer 3 years ago.
Exactly.
When hazies were sort of breaking in, and we thought in usual fashion we'd go and do a big double hazy. And the amount of hops that we had to put into this beer was insane. And there's two issues. One, there's the amount of ingredients going into it, and particularly hops, expensive hops. And two is the actual beer you get out at the end. You do lose, because of all that dry hop, you are leaving a lot of beer behind in the fermenter when you're transferring to bright. So, bloody horribly expensive to make. We found out the hard way from the very first one we brewed how expensive it is, and then we've sort of backed it off a bit. But
not to mention the yeast pitch.
I think yeast, I've said this from the beginning, you know, all the way back then, is yeast is so important in any beer, but particularly in these ones. So we got a nice healthy pitch from the States at the time, and yeah, it wasn't cheap.
Yeah, because you as a consumer, I've noticed, like, there's been a few comments around a couple of the hazy producers that, you know, their beers might be slightly more expensive than some of the others.
Yeah.
But when you're hopping at 20-odd grams a litre and that sort of thing, the cost of goods really does go up in both ways, because you're extracting, well, you're probably leaving more liquid in the tank and you've got more of the goods going in there as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, when you see these big expensive hazes out there, it's usually for a very good reason. So most brewers will you know, it's a multiple of like you said, cogs, what it costs to make the beer, and it's up there. I can't think of any beers that are more, you know, except for the big barrel aged, take a lot more work and time. I don't think there's much more expensive beers to brew.
Are a lot of the bigger and better hazies double dry hopped?
I would assume so. I mean, that's I double and triple high dry hop West Coast as well, so it's something I believe in with any type of beer, but called hoppy style beer. It's a much I like using more than one dry hop. One, it's a better use of the ingredient because we're a traditional dry hopper. We dry hop in the top of the tank. So dumping a lot of hops in one go tends to not extract as much out as by splitting it into two or three different charges. So
yeah, okay, yeah.
That and we believe there's an added complexity by dry hopping at different stages as well. And then of also with the hazies, there's another added complexity in that. We're talking about dry hopping at, you know, pretty early in fermentation as well, and by dry hopping early, we get biotransformation, some of the stuff that Ben mentioned before, but we also want to put some more traditional dry hops in there later on as well.
I've always tripled. Well, I'm same. Always double, triple. Mine are every single hazy I ever do is triple dry hop. It's one mid ferment.
Triple.
One mid ferment, two. Because any other normal beer I do ever, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if I'm making a super light crispy pilsner with a slight dry hop in it, I'll still dry hop it twice. It's just what I do. It's just always. It just makes more sense to me to spread that out over time. You know what I mean? So yeah, but all mine are. Every hazy I do has a mid ferment dry hop and two afterwards.
Joel Slade asks, is hop freshness the key to a great Nipah?
Shit, yeah.
Okay.
absolutely. Going back to, you know, what I was saying before with older hops can lead to some more dry hop bitterness, things like that. But just look in general with beer, you know, if you're making a sour with aged hops, well, that doesn't matter then, does it? But if you want a nice fruity IPA, well, then you should always strive to get the freshest hops you can. As simple as that. What you put in your beer is what's going to come out the other end. And I threw out like 2 kilos of Eldorado the other day because I didn't like the smell of it. You know what I mean? Like it's just one of those things where if you are striving for the best, you have to use the best. And that kind of almost goes back to that cost question as well, you know, because a lot of people out there have been, you know, they try and make it a cheap hazy and they always fall short. I know guys, you know, make hazies at like 4 grams per liter dry hop like that. They're still a nice beer, but they're not what they're supposed to be, if that makes sense. You know, you just can't, I'm always a firm believer that if you really believe in a good product, you'll put the best products you can into it, regardless of what it costs. Simple as that.
You're a lager at 4 grams per liter.
Yeah, that's you.
we mentioned the Nipah in that question from Joel, but not all hazy beers are Nipahs, are they?
Nah, definitely not. I don't really. I have brewed like a Nipah, I guess you could say before, but I tend to. I tend to enjoy them. Like I've said before, they need, like, I think they need a little bit of bitterness to them. And it's not necessarily that you're going to drink it and go, oh, that's bitter, but you're going to have that. There's going to be that sort of that bitterness, you know, that just really helps carry the flavors all the way across your palate. I just think they fall short with that without somewhat of a bitterness to them. So, you know, while they probably are a Nipah or a New England pale ale, I just prefer to call them like a hazy pale or a hazy IPA for that reason that, you know, they might not always be as thick and juicy as what some of these doubles are. You know, I've brewed them before, but I tend to prefer them with maybe a little bit more bitterness, and I tend to get better feedback on them that way as well. You know what I mean? I think they probably technically could, you know, they would all fall under the Nipah, I suppose, but it's a hard question really, because, you know, where does a XPA start, a stop and an IPA start? You know what I mean? Like things like that. It's just one of those questions that, depending on who you ask, everyone's going to have a different opinion on it. Sure, mine could be a New England pale ale or a Nipah, some of the IPAs I make, but I call them a hazy IPA because they are more like a hazy, juicy IPA rather than this massive, big, thick, you know, something that's finished at 10:30 and it goes down like, you know, like a thick breakfast juice.
Dave, have you put out an actual Nipah yourself, or are you just doing the more like what Ben's saying?
Well, I think there's different styles in the hazy range. We have a semi-permanent Nipah, which is the Cloud 9.
Yep.
It gets released every couple of months. We released a hazy lager on the when was that? That was a couple of months ago.
Hazy lager.
A pilot release that we just released on the bar, so I didn't make it out into cans. But it was an interesting beer. I think, you know, it was well brewed. It was hazy. It had lager characteristics. It was brewed at, you know, quite cold. Would we brew it again? 50-50. I think we still came back and said, oh, I think we'd rather drink a good hazy IPA or a hazy pale. We've done hazy pales as well. And I think, you know, Ben makes a good point. I think sometimes you just want something a little, not so thick, not so big. The same reason you would drink a pale ale is against the West Coast IPA, just something a little bit lighter and you can have a few more of. So I think they all fit in under the style and, you know, have their place in the market.
Would you ever brew a mid-strength hazy, or is that just ridiculous cost-wise?
I remember once upon a time Dave said he'd never brew anything session.
I've said a lot of things. Like, not that I
What's that beer I'm called? Little Smith or something?
Nailed it. Yeah. I've done them. I've done like 3% hazies. They're awesome.
They go okay?
They're real cool. I love them. Yeah, oh, cool. I just mash super high. I mash at like 70, 71 degrees and just like pump them out and they're really good. I like them. I do them quite often at home actually just for something to drink. I honestly brew a lot of low alcohol beers at home because I like to just have a nice, easy drinking beer, you know what I mean?
Rather, there's words for people like you.
Yeah. Is there?
Can't handle their liquor.
Oh, well, you can go fuck yourself because I'm with him. Someone's just got to stay tidy, all right?
Yeah, says the bloke who accidentally forgot about the squealer of double IPA I left downstairs for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
See, if it was a light one, you could have drunk it, mate, and driven home.
Don't start ganging up on me, you two.
Hey, let's break this up with a letter from one of our listeners, Owen Ridgewell. It says, "Hi Chris and the other two, long time listener, been loving the series.
Nice
those
to meet
two
you
are dickheads." he says, "I have a question about dry hopping and equipment. Is it better to chuck dry hop amounts into the fermenter commando, or using a hop bomb or a hop tube? Okay, as well. I've just done my second dry hop on a Nipah, and when pulled out the first hop tube, the hops were quite compacted in the tube, even though it was only filled to about 2/3 of its capacity. The hops were wet the whole way through, but I wonder if the hard clumping is limiting the oil extraction."
Yeah.
Dave, I think it's similar to what you were talking about before.
I'm still laughing at the commando.
Does that mean? Oh, okay, just throw it in.
Actually, right. I'm going to use that. Look, I'm a strong believer as a home brewer, as a professional brewer of going commando.
I fucking love that. I read that and I cracked up. I was like, that's so good.
So I think the hops, you've got to give it the opportunity to disperse throughout the liquid and the hop socks or hop, I don't even know what a hop tube is. I'm sorry, but
I reckon it's one of those stainless steel ones, you know, like a hop spot.
The T-ball baggie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, look, the T-bag.
Speaking of commando.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't get a chance to get out there and be free and easy in the liquid. So, look, the only thing that as a home brewer that might bring you unstuck is what happens at the bottom of your fermenter. Whether if you've got a cone at the bottom, don't bother. If you've got a flat bottom and you're pulling the beer off pretty close to the bottom of the tank, obviously that presents you an issue. So I think you can get, you know, it's pretty easy to get plastic conical fermenters these days, and I think it really is a pretty important part of the brewing process to be able to leave all that crap behind. So get something with a cone in the bottom, or at least something that draws off an inch or two above, and let them go free and easy.
I'm gonna add to that. When I used to brew with plastic fermenters, one of the best advice I ever got was from anyone was, if you're gonna do a hoppy beer, put your fermenter on an angle. I used to use like the little CO2 canisters or something like that, and I'd just place them just under the tap. And then everything you add to the fermenter falls away from the tap. So
that's pretty clever.
Oh, because I've been dry hopping the shit out of beer since I did biff before I even knew what I was doing. I was just like hops and just biffing, and that was one of the first things. I can't remember who told me. I don't know how I got that recommendation. I don't know who I got it from, but it was a it was an absolute lifesaver with flat bottom fermenters, you know, because
that's good.
Obviously, the more hops you got, the more you could put it back on an angle, so long as your fermenting chamber has room to tilt your fermenter back. But, you know, if I had a lot of hops, I'd just put the tap sideways in the fridge and then sort of put it sideways along the fridge, you know what I mean? And that was a really big help. But the other side of it too is hop stocks and stuff. I always just think you want to try and minimize foreign things in your beer, if that makes sense. Using hop stocks or anything like that, look, while a stainless steel one's really easy to sanitize, they're not hard at all. It's just something else that can go wrong. I've always just thrown them in, and with, because I have spoken to a lot of people, obviously, that use hop stocks because of that blocking issue. And as soon as I've told them about putting the fermenter up on the back, they haven't had the problem anymore. So,
another quick one here from Justin Time. What are the main factors for hay stability, especially after being packaged for a few weeks?
Just make sure it's not yeast. Yeast drops out quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, really. It's just making sure that the beer you're brewing is a good hazy beer, and it's not, you're not just throwing in a bunch of trub into your, you know, you're not pouring the first glasses and going, yeah, that's awesome, that's nice and hazy, and you drink it and your eyes water a little bit and you tell yourself it's really good and then you keep going. It's just, the biggest thing is to just make sure that, you know, your beer's gone through a really good cold crash and everything's dropped out of it. And I'm glad
you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because I know when I was working on my first one with you, you mentioned that cold crashing is still really important. And for some reason in my head, I thought that was counterintuitive to what we're trying to achieve here with the beer, but you still cold crash everything.
Absolutely. I always cold crash, always cold crash your beer. I cringe so much when I see people saying they don't cold crash their hazies. If you want a good hazies, you have to drop all that bitter yeast, everything, stuff that you don't want, half of that stuff in your bottle or keg or whatever it might be, you know. If that makes your beer drop clear but tastes good, then you're, in my opinion, you're already ahead of the person who has a hazy beer but hasn't dry hopped it and is mixing their beer up, you know, to make it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would prefer to have a cold crashed clear beer that's still nice and juicy rather than one that's, you know, the keg's got a whole bunch of yeast in the bottom of it and sediment, and you're getting this, you know what I mean? You just really want to drop all that stuff clear. Like if you concentrate on really getting a good biotransformation happening, drop your beer clear. And if you get the haze, you get it. Look, I've cold crashed beers and they've been, you know, they've been on chill for a week and they're hazy, but, you know, and you keg them and then maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks later they start clearing out. Like, you're still doing the right thing there. Like, you've still dropped all that heavy yeast and trub and all that sort of crap out of it that you don't want. So I'm still, you know, it's kind of like that argument with adding Wilflock to the kettle. I always add Wilflock to the kettle because I still don't, you know, the more we learn about it, the less you sort of, you still want a lot of that crap to stay in the kettle. So I still add Wilflock to mine and they seem to work, you know, still works. So
what if someone said add gelatin to the beer to clear it out?
Dave, you can answer this.
Yeah, look, we've played around just on the pilot brewery and a few little bits just we've been trying, you know, over the years, been trying things out. And you can definitely, a well made hazy, you should be able to find with any type of finings and still have a hazy beer, because what you're essentially doing is pulling out predominantly yeast. So I'm a big believer that you can find a hazy, no problem at all, and still have a hazy beer. I know it doesn't feel right. Well, it's if you're having a problem with getting the yeast to drop out, then try it. You know, if you're letting a beer chill for a long time, using finings, doing whatever, and it's dropping clear, then you need, that's fine. You just need to go back and fix the haze, how you're actually creating that haze and getting your biotransformations and, you know, protein-rich cereals and all that kind of stuff right first. So, but yeah, I'm 100% behind Ben there. I'd rather a nice, clear, you know, good-tasting beer than a hazy cup of Trub any day.
is it Trub or Trub? Come on, you're both saying different things.
I reckon it's Trub. He said Trub since the days. What, do you reckon Trub too?
No, I reckon Trub.
You also say Garage, so I'm not going to listen to you, mate.
And I'm actually the hack, so I probably don't fucking know.
No, it's because Dave wants to be an American at heart.
Does he?
Yeah.
That's tub, mate. I think it, I am an American at heart, but
yeah, you don't. When you say tub, you don't say tube.
Oh, here we go.
Gonna get in the hot tube.
I don't know. Yeah, whatever.
Going back to the cold crashing thing. That also we also kind of touched on that a little bit before with, you know, what we did at the start was really concentrate on the appearance. Now, if you're not cold crashing your beer because it's the appearance you're after, then you're going about it the wrong way. You need to learn. You know, we made those mistakes of just, Jesus Christ, we just want to get it as hazy as possible without really concentrating on the beer behind that haze. And yep. And that, you know, like I say, that if it's a clear beer but it tastes like a hazy, well, then you're halfway there. You know what I mean? And you, if you're getting a hazy beer through no cold crash, well, then – look, honestly, as soon as you put it in a keg, all of that crap is going to go to the bottom of your keg and you're going to have glasses of shit for a couple of days. So
you could roll it around every time you drink it.
That's the other side of it too, is that not cold crashing it in the fermenter is a bit of a waste of time, because as soon as you put it in your fridge, whether it be individual bottles or keg, you are cold crashing that beer in the keg. So, you know what I mean? You're just increasing your wastage, really, in all honesty, because you've, you know, now you've got 19 litres with 2 litres of shit at the bottom of it rather than a clear night. You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah.
All right, let's start to wrap this thing up. So, let's talk about the top tips for making hazy. So, first up, I'm going to say it's the right grains with the high protein. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Not too much.
Next. Not too much what?
Just. And a nice steady hand with those as well. You can go too far as well.
Okay. Righto. Pick the right yeast.
Yep. Definitely. Most definitely.
Any favourites that you want to offer up?
Favourite yeasts?
Depends what you're after. You can go two ways with it. Sorry, Ben, but there's two ways you can go here. If you want to go the heady, Topper way, it's a very different yeast. And Heady Topper will clear quite quickly. Again, it drops out over a good month or so, and that's because it's a high flocculant. You know, at least it's probably an easier one to start with, to be honest. It's a pretty forgiving yeast. What do they call it? Conan. Many different formats, many different brewers. And then,
I used that for years in the GY054. Yeah,
and it seems to clear out relatively quickly, just like Heady does.
Yeah.
But if you want to go those big, thick treehouse style beers, I think you're looking more at an English style yeast. So an English ale yeast.
After you've got your high protein grains and your yeast right, what's next to remember?
Good fresh hops.
Yep,
as fresh as you can. And you know what? I was actually going to say we did touch on this before. With it is hard sometimes, you know, with not knowing whether the hops you're getting are fresh or they're good quality or whatever, but. I'm going to give Dermot a shout out here for Beer Co, because he's always been really good, and he's probably one of the best places I've been able to find really fresh hops on a small level, whether it's 100 grams or a kilo. You know what I mean? He's always got quite current hop stock, and the good thing is as well is it says what year they're from on his website, so you know what you're buying.
Yeah.
Okay.
With hops, get to know where they're coming from. We don't buy professionally hops unless we know where they come from, you know, how many times around the world they've been. It's really important to get to know your homebrew shop, where they get their hops, how fresh they are. There's no difference to the way we would.
Final tip for Neepers, for hazies?
Fucking cold crash them.
Good. Fucking cold crash them. There you go. Yeah. Doesn't get any simpler than that.
Yeah. Just cold crash them, for God's sake. Look, everyone tries different things, and that's the beauty of homebrewing, is you can do it and it can work, it couldn't work, who knows? But you know, I always try to brew the same way that you would in a commercial setting, and you would never not cold crash a beer has to be done.
Fair enough. And before we meet again on this podcast, you blokes, oh, not you, Ben, you've been fine, but Dave, can you just fucking sort out your technical problems, can you?
I will do my best to fix it. Yeah, it's always me, isn't it? I don't know why that is.
Seems to be that way. I don't know what it is, mate.
No, I'm sorry. We will fix that for you next time.
Yeah. Go use some of your expensive fucking gear you bought, mate.
Yeah, I could.
he's giving his microphone and stuff to the kids.
As with many things in the IT world and the brewing world, it often comes down to the operator. So I'm a.
It does. It does. You are so right. Well, gents, thank you very much for joining me again tonight. It's been fun once again. Maybe we can do it a little bit quicker next time because it does seem that people enjoy these episodes of us three idiots just crapping on.
Yep.
But there is, in amongst all that crapping on, there is some real gems of knowledge being shared around, which is unreal, and people certainly are appreciating what you two blokes have got to offer. So thank you very much, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, man.
Can't wait. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?